Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. I hope you are well this week. I am not. You may be able to tell from the tone of my voice that everything's all a bit stuffy again. Yes, it's that time again. It's that time for my immune system to decide it needs a little workout. So I have a cold this week. It was bad enough that I took the day off today, mostly so I could just sleep a lot, which I did, and I'll be feeling better, and I can go back to work tomorrow, and I'm sure everybody will be happy except my students, but that's how these things go. So, not feeling too well, not tip-top shape, but you know what? I'm here for you. All things considered, though, why don't we jump into the review today so we can keep this nice and short and save what's left of my voice. Now, last week we talked about the ocean and about waves and giant rogue waves that could come in out of nowhere and just crush you to little tiny pieces. And it was all about the unpredictability of the world and how much we don't know. We don't know everything about the oceans. We don't know what the oceans are capable of. We don't know when these giant waves are going to come or how they're going to come or what to do when they do come. And I said that this week's book is more about what we do know. It's about the rest of the world. And unfortunately, I didn't get any correct guesses this week, but that's okay, because the title of the book is pretty generic. Well, at least the main title. There is a subtitle. This week's book is The Earth, An Intimate History by Richard Forty. And I begin with a question. It's an odd question, so bear with me. Is it possible for a book to be utterly fascinating and yet, at the same time, a perfect cure for insomnia? I never would have thought so until I got to this book. It's never really happened before. It does sound really contradictory, but it is true. Reading the book, I found myself just drawn in by the power of Forty's words and this obvious enthusiasm for the subject. He's a paleontologist by trade, but his era of expertise goes so far back that it's, well, it's practically geology anyway. And geology is what this book is all about. There are those who believe that there are forces beyond our ken that shape our lives. Some believe that the universe itself is alive, filled to the brim with some kind of formless substance that wants us to have what we want. Others attribute great influence to the motion of non-terrestrial planets. I mean, just a while ago, I saw a warning about Mercury being in retrograde, and that such apparent motion would spell disaster in communications-related endeavors. Other people believe there are gods or ghosts or fairies whose wishes and whims have decided who we are and what we will be. But Richard Forty? He knows what's really going on. Forty knows it's the rocks. Not just the garden variety rocks you pick up in your garden. No, no, no. These are the real rocks. The gneiss and the schist and the granite, the great lumbering tectonic plates, relentless in their motion across the face of the earth, carrying the continents on their backs. The churning, unknowable mantle that holds it all up, revealing only the tiniest glimpses of itself through the effluvium of volcanoes. The earth tells us who we are and who we will be, for it is the motions of the earth that made our world what it is. It gave shape to the continents. It has raised and lowered mountains. It has created and unmade deserts 100 times over. The rich and fertile fields in which we grow our crops, the barren wastelands that we avoid because we know they are places where we do not belong, all of these were created by the engine of plate tectonics, by billions of years of relentless motion, of continents smashing into each other, coming apart and then colliding again. All of these have conspired to create the thin, almost evanescent period of time in which we live. And it will continue, long after we are gone, without ever having bothered to notice that we're here. Well, the book is humbling, to say the least. When you think that the Appalachians, for example, used to be mountains that rivaled the Alps and the Himalayas, that they were the product of not the most recent supercontinent, Gondwana, nor the one before that, Laurasia. The gentle rolling hills of the Appalachians, along which thousands of summer and weekend hikers travel, were born 300 million years ago in the creation of Pangaea. Time, wind, and rain wore them down to what they are today, but they stand as evidence of Earth's deep history. Though not quite as old as the Grenville Rocks of Central Park in New York. These are remnants of mountains formed a billion years ago, before life was more than a thin film of algae on a hypoxic sea. Forty writes well. It is hard to overstate how important that is when considering a book meant for the general audience. Not only can you tell that he obviously loves his subject, but you can see that he is a good and devoted writer who spent a lot of time thinking of ways to communicate the literally unthinkable amount of time necessary for the motions of the Earth to have put things where they are today. Geologic events are slow and hard to picture in our mind's eyes, but he tries. He tries to get into your head the vast temperatures and pressures that operate just a few miles below where we sit now, and the utterly alien environment they create. He brings to life the arguments and the battles that went on between geologists who tried their best over the centuries to untangle the folded and twisted stories of the rocks and figure out how they came to be the way they were. The story that Forty is telling is 4.5 billion years in the making, a time span that we simple humans cannot truly grasp. And he does have an excellent way of phrasing his points. In talking about the hot springs of Italy in which the ancient Romans lounged, he says, "These springs were the exhalations of the magmatic unconscious." In reminding us that the motions of the earth determine where we live, what animals we can raise, and what crops we can grow, he says, "The geological unconscious cannot be denied, for it still guides the way we use the land and rules the plow. We are in thrall to the underworld." And finally, in a phrase that evoked Sagan in my mind's ear, he says, "In this way, the depths intercede in our superficial lives. There are unseen and unbidden forces as indifferent to the fate of the sentient organisms living above them as the distant stars." The man does have a way with words, that much is sure. For all that this is the story of our world, and therefore ourselves, it is a hard book to keep up with. Indeed, as I mentioned before, I found myself nodding off more than once, no matter that I wanted to keep reading about the manner in which the Colorado River cut through the ever-rising plateau through which it coursed. The book, I believe, kind of skirts that edge of popular science and specialist science. Forty does not skimp on the technical language and seems to be talking to an audience that already has a pretty good grasp on the terminology and concepts of geology. The readers that he's after in this book are the ones who used to be called rock hounds when they were kids, and who know a gneiss from a granite, which I, technically speaking, do not. Now, while I do love science, and I find the history of plate tectonics fascinating, I never got into geology as deeply as I did other sciences. And that's not to say that I never will. If anything, this book made me look more closely at the rocks I see around me and wonder at their provenance. The granite facing of buildings all the way to the simple sand of a baseball field. They're all ancient in different ways and have fascinating stories. But when I read the book, I was lacking in a certain kind of entry-level understanding of the science, and that was probably what made it a tough book to get through. So, if you're a rock hound or know someone who is, pick up a copy of this book. If you like to break your brain thinking about the vast expanses of time required to make a planet on which Homo sapiens can be the species it always wanted to be, this is the book for you. If you're having trouble getting to sleep and you aren't fond of medication to send you off to slumberland, well, this book probably wouldn't hurt. So let me give you a quote. At this point in the book, he's talking about a bar in Paddington Station, you know, the bear. And it has a granite countertop there. I think it's granite. And most of us wouldn't look at the granite countertop except to wonder where our beer is. But he looks at it and he thinks about it and he says, "If you have just missed your train, you can at least lean on a bar that is 1,500 million years old and reflect that perhaps half an hour is not that serious a delay." So that is Richard Forty, talking about a bar countertop in Paddington Station, in his book, The Earth. Okay, let's get to next week's book, while I still have the energy to get to next week's book, because I got to take my NyQuil and go to bed. We talked about the waves. We've talked about the Earth upon which the waves roll. And I didn't mean to make this a theme thing, but what the heck? You know, you take the train and go where it's going. Next week, we're going to go all the way, baby. That's right. We start on one scale, go on a big scale. This is the biggest scale there is. That's next week's book. And if you know the science I like and the scientists I like, you can probably tell what book that is. And if you've been listening this long, you may well know that. All right, so that is your clue. Let me know if you got it. You can put it in a comment. You can email it to me. You know the drill. In the meantime, I'm coughing. I've got too many coughs to edit out. So I think that's a cue that it's time for me to go. Thank you very much for sticking around. I do appreciate that as always, and I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.